Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. In the spotlight on Money FM 89.3.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3, and in the spotlight today, an international headline that we've been tracking over the past few weeks. Now, gunfire echoed through the night as the Taliban celebrated the departure of the last U.S. troops from Afghanistan after a 20-year war.
Of course, question now remain on what this will mean for those who remain in Afghanistan that wish to leave, and what the Taliban rule would mean for women in the workplace, as well as for education.
To find out more, we're joined now by Professor Greg Barton, Chair in Global Islamic Politics at Deakin University. Professor Barton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel. Good to be with you.
So, Professor Barton, we've been tracking developments in Afghanistan today, reports of gunfire last night in celebration of international troops leaving Afghanistan. What do you think the atmosphere is like on the ground today?
Rachel, it's very much, by all accounts, very much a matter of wait and see. There are many people who are happy to see the Taliban victory, but the most recent social survey across the whole of Afghanistan said that 85% of Afghans didn't support the Taliban. The Taliban have won because of superior military discipline and because of the collapse of the previous corrupt government, also because of the way America mismanaged the transition. The people aren't, they didn't choose the Taliban, they're stuck with the Taliban. Taliban are, you know, putting on a progressive face, saying that they're changed. And I think people are saying, let's wait and see. There's no confidence. The banks haven't opened yet. There's been no access to cash for almost 2 weeks. The economy is on the edge of collapsing, and people are very anxious.
Professor, once the dust settles down, though, what do you think will happen in Afghanistan now that, well, Western troops have left?
Well, that's a big question, Timothy. Because the Taliban won such a decisive, uncontested military victory, they've not had to negotiate power sharing. It's all theirs now. Mm-hmm. And yet, this is a nation of 38 million people. Median age is 18, so most of them are very young, two-thirds under the age of 25. So most grew up or born after the last time the Taliban were in power. And the Taliban themselves are very young. They've got maybe 100,000 fighters, but that's not enough to run the country. They're good at fighting, but they're not used to running things. So they need 1.5 million civil servants to come back to work, to get the lights on, the bakeries going. They need access to support internationally in terms of finance. They've got around $9 billion U.S., in their national reserves that are locked up in New York banks, understandably. So they want to negotiate for that. So there's some leverage over them to make them live up to their promises. And if they fail, it's not just that we might see them reverting to previous form. In this nation of 38 million people, half of that country is on the edge of severe poverty. So there's a lot at stake.
So, Professor, what do we know of the Taliban so far, though? Do you think they will be going back to the way they were back in the 90s? Or, as you mentioned, many of them are younger members of the Taliban. Will they be a more progressive type of rulers of the land?
I think the word progressive, Timothy, is probably a bit of an overstatement at the moment, if even if we're optimistic.
Moderate, how about that?
There's leverage on them to moderate what they've done in the past. Now, we have some senior leaders like Mullah Baradar, who was one of the co-founders with Mullah Omar of the Taliban all those years ago. And we have some other senior leaders who are showing signs of moderation. But they're really, you know, think of Game of Thrones. They're ruling over a federation of tribal fighters. So it's not even clear that they're going to be able to control this loose federation. There's the political leaders like Mullah Baradar flowing in from Doha who are used to politics. And then there's the military commanders on the ground, and trying to work out who gets to literally call the shots isn't clear yet. So there's a lot of uncertainty. I think even for the Taliban, I think one thing we forget is I don't think the Taliban expected to be marching uncontested into Kabul in the space of a weekend. They thought it'd be a long, hard fight. So they're a little unprepared, they're unsure, and they haven't really had a chance to test their political power with each other. So there's a lot uncertain yet, but there's a lot riding on them. They've worked for it, to see it from their point of view, they've worked for 20 years to win this so-called Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. They are, we can be, I think, confident, nationalist patriots. They want this nation-building project to work, so they will be prepared to compromise, at least the political leaders, whether the more military-oriented regional commanders fall into line is another question.
Now, Professor Barton, just speaking of that quick turnaround, over the last week or so, the U.S. and its allies did succeed in evacuating more than 123,000 people from Kabul. That's over the past 2 weeks. But tens of thousands of people who helped Western countries during the war were left behind. Now, the U.K. and France and I think the U.N. Council did talk about a safe zone, but I understand that's now a no-go. So what's going to happen?
We're just sort of just hoping against hope, I think, Rachel, that somehow because of these reasons of leverage we've been discussing, the Taliban will be persuaded they need to keep Hamid Karzai International Airport open in Kabul, but also perhaps airports, international airports in Mazar-e-Sharif in the north and Kandahar in the south. There's self-interest in doing that. You know, they care about their reputation, oddly enough. They want to be recognized. So whilst they're in this moment of relative, I wouldn't say weakness, but need, I think it's very important to hold them to account and say, look, if you want people to trust you as being Taliban 2.0, as being somehow, you know, more moderate and growing up and changed, then you're going to have to allow people who want to leave because it's not good for you for them to stay. And if you mistreat them, it's going to completely demolish all confidence, and then you're going to really struggle.
We're speaking to Professor Greg Barton, Chair in Global Islamic Politics at Deakin University, about the situation in Afghanistan now and looking forward to what will happen. Professor, is there a role, do you think, for past leaders of Afghanistan who are perhaps still there, Hamid Karzai and Abdullah Abdullah? Do you think the Taliban reach out to them for their expertise in engaging the international community?
That's a really good question, Timothy. One thing we do know is that Hamid Karzai, to his credit, has stayed back in Kabul. He is talking with, there are already photographs of him talking with the Taliban. You know, there are lots of sort of ethnic tribal links here that are very complex for us outside Afghanistan to understand, family connections. And I think people like that can play a critical role. What's pretty clear now is that when former President Ashraf Ghani left literally all of a sudden, that led to the collapse of the government and the fall of Kabul. Now it's other leaders, former leaders before him, who may play that really critical role in bridge building, because the Taliban, in the circumstances they came to power, had enough military nous and discipline to win military control, but they can't govern by themselves. They've got to form coalitions and partnerships, even though they had a clear military victory. They just can't run things. They don't have the human resources. So civil servants, former politicians, people who are respected in Afghan society, these are really key to them.
And you mentioned earlier the importance of perception. What might international relations with Afghanistan look like? I mean, China's foreign minister recently told Antony Blinken that the world must guide Afghanistan.
Well, China's right, of course, Rachel. I mean, that doesn't mean that we're going to see what we would like to see. I mean, China maintains a relationship with the junta in Myanmar. In fact, they couldn't, you know, survive without Chinese help. China maintains a relationship with Pyongyang and the regime in North Korea. I'm sure China would prefer different regimes in those neighbors. Similarly, in Afghanistan, I don't think this is what China would choose. I mean, the talk that this is all somehow going to be a great windfall for China, I don't think that's the way Beijing sees it. They've just got to make the best of what they've got. But this is really a time for the international community to come together. China will need to work closely with Pakistan to provide security on the ground. If there can be some, you know, more healthy relationship between Washington and Beijing, that would be helpful in resolving issues with Afghanistan. So it's a real test for the international community. But it is a moment when China starts to play a more prominent role in global matters, in circumstances where America's retreated. It is a time for China to advance, and that's to everyone's interest.
Now, let's have a look at the biggest concern when this all started 2 weeks ago, or for the welfare of women and for children. What do you think will happen to them under the Taliban? Now, they have already said that women and children's rights will be protected under the framework of Islamic law. Has there been any more clarity on that?
Yeah, there's been a few things that have become clear, Timothy. One is that there is still this window of opportunity to hold this incoming government to account if they want help, to allow people who want to leave. And I think it's important for many, you know, activists and teachers and politicians, particularly women, to be allowed to leave. So we need to really try and keep that window open. It's true the last American C-17 has taken off and they're gone, but there's still this hope we can get people out who need to get out. What we have seen are a number of photographs of assemblies of educators and sort of incoming Taliban government officials in which the entire hall is full of nothing but men and no women. And that suggests that they're not quite ready to make the changes they've talked about. They've said, yes, women can go to university as long as they're taught by a female lecturer. Well, there's just not enough women in the university system to make that demand practical. So I think it's going to vary a lot. I think in some provinces, according to local Taliban leaders, girls may indeed be encouraged to go to school, but in other provinces it's going to be much harder. And as for universities and public life, as for women in the media, for example, you know, we've already seen signs that that's completely changed.
Now, moving on to another topic that we've been watching in Afghanistan is that we did see U.S. drone strikes in Kabul this week. U.S. military officials said that this was to prevent another deadly suicide attack at the airport ahead of the 31st evacuation deadline. Now, this was reportedly done by an Afghan branch of the Islamic State group. ISK is said to be behind Thursday's bombings as well. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about who exactly ISK are and their relationship with Taliban and what's going on there.
Yeah, ISK stands for Islamic State Khorasan, Khorasan being the historical name given for Afghanistan and that area around Central Asia or West Asia. Islamic State, like al-Qaeda, in the middle of last decade, around 2015, began reaching out to try and establish branches. They've both had success in Africa. I mean, there's recently a serious insurgency in Mozambique, which was Islamic State linked. And Islamic State Khorasan has struggled in Afghanistan. They've never had more than a few thousand fighters. But in the city of Kabul, the national capital, and in Jalalabad, the city east on the Afghan-Pakistan border, they've got strong support. And this is a group that, in their military operations, makes the Taliban seem moderate because, as we saw with Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, they're prone to really extreme brutality, particularly against Shia Muslims and against women. So in Kabul, in recent times, they bombed a maternity hospital where women were literally giving birth. They bombed a girls' school, killing 90 Hazara girl students. They're really tough. They see the Taliban as selling out, in their words, because they're sort of negotiating for reasons we've just been discussing, you know, for political reasons. And so they see an opportunity space to expand their recruiting by being more pure than the Taliban. But that just means being more brutal. There's probably only a few thousand ISK fighters, but many of them are native Kabulis, and they know the city, so they represent an ongoing threat. The Americans have left, but they represent a threat to the Taliban government now.
Okay, well, Professor, just very quickly, so what are you going to be watching out for next in the week ahead?
The next thing, Rachel, is the new government's formed. Let's see who they've got, who their so-called ministers are. Let's see, as you said, how many members of the former government, people like Hamid Karzai, you know, what role they play in some. Let's see how many women there are. And let's see when demands are put to them, if they want to get their national reserves unfrozen and international aid, what they're prepared to commit to. Particularly that includes letting people leave.
Well, Professor Barton, thank you so much for taking the time to share all of that information and analysis with us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Professor Greg Barton, Chair in Global Islamic Politics at Deakin University. You're listening to Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.